The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
The thrill kill hits the press. For no reason, a teenager shoots a little toddler playing in his own front yard. And you read about it in the newspaper the next day. Another maybe pours gasoline on a sleeping drunk in Skid Row and sets him afire. That happened not long ago, too. Or two teenagers rob a candy store and, while they're at it, just for kicks, decide to shoot both of the elderly proprietors. Gangs wage warfare in Los Angeles, Detroit, Houston, New York, the big cities of the United States, in Brooklyn and Bedford-Stuyvesant and in St. Louis and Atlanta. And we read about it and we wonder, what are we going to do with all this mounting child crime? Why, what we need is more courts, more laws, more judges, more defense attorneys, more juvenile workers, more social workers, perhaps. We need more halfway houses and bridgeback programs, and we need more prison farms. We need more reform schools. We need more of these people who can work with the youth and try to rehabilitate them. Is that what we really need? Well, as long as we want to deal with the effect instead of the cause, that's perhaps what we think we need. But if you want to deal with the cause, then you have to ask, what is the real cause of child crime? Where does it all start? Criminals are made, not born. And believe it or not, every last bit of what you see today in these sickening, sensational cases of thrill kills, of gangland-style murders, and of some of the major crimes being committed by those 15 and 16 years of age are the direct result of wrong child rearing. Today, the average baby being born in the United States of America, based upon present crime curves, stands a better chance of being murdered before he dies of any other cause than he would have stood as a chance, a possibility of death, if he had worn a uniform in one of the military services when our country was involved in World War II. Now, that's not saying very much for our society and its mountainous, skyrocketing wave of youth crime. We know that a great deal of youth crime is now in gangland fashion because of various racist groups, and nearly always they do organize around racial lines in some of the big cities of the United States. And thrill kills are becoming quite commonplace. Now, youthful gangs organize together and roam the streets, either afoot or in automobiles, often as not, trying to kill the member of the opposite gang. And sometimes other people get hurt in between, such as sensationalized thrill kills, which have happened in Los Angeles of recent date, of people who were shot down for no reason other than the gang was looking for some kind of a victim. So people wonder, how can this happen? Who is responsible? What kind of young kids are these? What do we need to combat this kind of crime? And we talk about more policemen and modern technology, more helicopters, more patrol cars, more policemen on the beat, more money, more lawyers, more defense attorneys, more counselors, more probation officers, more prisons, more youth forest camps and reformatories and detention homes and bigger county jails and maybe just enfenced or enclosed and fenced areas to put these kids somewhere. We demand the county do something, or the city do something, or the state do something, or the federal government do something. We demand that our tax dollars be better used to combat this kind of thing. All that is well and good if all we want to do is treat the effect instead of getting at the underlying cause. But what is the real cause of teenage crime? Where does it all begin? It all begins right back in the home, because criminals are made, they are not born. When you look into the background of youthful murderers, rapists, arsonists, muggers, people who will rob and kill in the process, you will find almost every single time a certain similar parallel. You can't trace every bit of it, though, to a broken home. A lot of it is certainly traceable to broken homes, but increasingly you will find that youthful criminals can come from almost any background. They can come from so-called respectable homes where dad has a good job and mom may also be working where everybody thinks everything is fine. No, it goes deeper than even the fact of broken homes, though broken homes have played a very important part. What is the cause? Well, the cause is the absence, the almost total absence of common sense child rearing in the United States today. The topsy-turvy, upside-down structure of society is traced exactly to the topsy-turvy upside-down structure of the home. The home is the undergirding of any kind of government. It is the building block of any society. And when the home is in trouble, that means the entirety of society is in trouble. When the home is coming apart at the seams, the society is beginning to fray and to come apart at the seams. Destroy the home, you begin to destroy the very underpinnings of all society. Because that's where all of this is traceable. Right back to the formative years in the home, in the family environment of every last one of these young people who run afoul of the law. And one in six of our teenagers in the middle teen brackets have stood before a judge. It's that bad. Tremendous percentages, 30, 40, 50% of some of the major index crimes, crimes of violence especially, crimes against property especially, you will find the teenagers looming as the largest single age category for that kind of serious crime. Well, a crime story you can see in a booklet we have for you on crime can be stopped. Here's how. It's giving you the crime clocks, the FBI uniform, crime statistics, and all of that. Statistics are not really much help in themselves because they have a way of being able to be misapplied or misinterpreted. But at least it shows you a little bit about what crime is like, how much of it there is, what your chances are. But this booklet is primarily aimed at trying to prevent it in your own community, your own environment, your own home, apartment, or condominium. How to make yourself safe and your family, and how to avoid giving the criminal an easy break more than it is talking just about youthful crime. In the last couple of programs, I've been going through some of the precepts that young people themselves have unitedly, as if with one voice, said to social workers who were trying to uncover the causal factors in youth crime. They were asking arsonists and murderers and rapists and youthful teenagers who had run afoul of the law, what was it in their past when they were in their home environment that do they think led toward this aberrant behavior? What was it that really was missing in their home? How would they like their parents to have been? What was their idea of the idealistic state for their parents to be in? What kind of parent and child relationship that they wish they had had? What was wrong with the home? Well, it's all a good exercise in hindsight. It's all a very beautiful point, again, that 2020 is the vision for hindsight. And so the kids were saying, and I've already gone through about three or four of these principles, that parents ought to be strict, that they ought to stay on the pedestal where they belong. They should not try to imitate the kids in hair and dress. They shouldn't try to descend to the kids' level. They ought to be strict and consistent and call kids bluffs. And they're using their own language to try to tell parents the way they wish parents would really be. And as I pointed out last time, these statements from these youngsters who themselves have run afoul of the law almost always diametrically contradict the statements that come from child psychologists. The child psychologists who try to tell you that you should be more permissive, more understanding, you don't want to thwart all these potential Einsteins by correcting them and give them some kind of a complex, are exactly at the opposite pole, 180 degrees in opposition to the teenagers themselves. The first point that I brought up last time was how the kids were saying, bug us a little, be strict and consistent in dishing out discipline, call our bluff, make it clear that you mean what you say. Don't be wishy-washy. Lukewarm answers make us uneasy. Show us who's boss. I remind you, I'm not reading statements out of the Bible. This is not from a social worker or a child counselor or a judge or J. Edgar Hoover, the former and now the late, of course, head of the FBI. These are statements from the teens themselves who, in strictest confidence, to a social worker who had gained their confidence, were really unloading of their most heartfelt ideas about the way they wish their child-parent relationships had developed. These are statements from a large number of living case histories of youthful criminals who were jailed for serious crimes, who were trying to tell in retrospect, in hindsight, the way they wish their parent-child relationships have been. The fact that they go directly contrary to most all the advice you can read in any child psychology book is not my fault. It's what the kids themselves are saying. Youngsters who didn't really know the kind of consistency and the kind of discipline and the kind of parental training that they wish they had had, who were lacking that kind of parental training, and then they say, looking now from behind prison bars, if that happens, which it doesn't happen very often, but once in a while it does happen, and they're saying, we wish we had been dealt with far more strictly than we had been as parents. Well, let's take a look at the fifth one, because I think these kids are really hitting the nail right on the head. They said, don't compromise. That's the fifth major point. I've covered the last four, the first four, about twice, so I won't repeat them over and over again. And don't be intimidated by our threats to drop out of school or leave home. That's a very important one, because most parents are. The kids don't even need to threaten they're going to leave home. Lots of parents get ideas that they are fearful that kids might, because they hear a lot of the statistics about youngsters who are running away from home and what might happen to your dear daughter that takes up with a drug cult and so on. Well, and in so doing, they lean over so far backwards, they might as well go ahead and force the kid out, because the kid's going to be doing just as bad or worse by staying at home. But the kids themselves say this: if you collapse, we will know we beat you down, and we will not be happy about the victory. Kids don't want everything they ask for. That's point number five from the youngsters themselves. The only question is, can we as parents believe it? We're asked by the kids not to compromise their values. They respect parents if parents are consistent. Well, you'll see in the booklet on The Plain Truth About Child Rearing that consistency is one of the most important points to remember in training a child from the very earliest age. So take 1 minute and I'll be right back.
You are the victim. Yes, one way or the other, we all feel the effects of the global increase in crime. Violence fills the pages of all nations' newspapers. Dishonesty and corruption are rampant. Laws go ignored as society suffers. But what can you as a private citizen do to protect yourself and those you love? For the answer to this important question, you need to read the informative booklet, Crime Can Be Stopped. Here's How. This publication also documents the crime picture worldwide, examines our criminal society, and presents sound measures you can employ to protect yourself from the increasing menace of crime. Your copy of Crime Can Be Stopped, Here's How, is free and will be sent upon request. So, if you're tired of being the victim, remember, crime can be stopped. Request it now. Dial this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
You're only going to get as good as you give. You're only going to get back out of a kid what you build into him and what you put into him. Because after all, they are a product and you are the factory. And there isn't anybody, not the police, the courts, institutions, educational in nature, military or various other type private schools, that are going to be able to even begin to cope with what parents do accidentally without even thinking about it. You can live life casually, accidentally, and not even consciously ever train your child and be doing an absolutely beautiful job of building every kind of a wrong principle and wrong habit and wrong attitude into your child that is possible. You can abandon a child on your living room floor. Now, I've talked to Dean Burtz, the head of the FCC formerly, and he is also addressed, and the lawyer, the chief counsel for the FCC, has addressed the student body of Ambassador Colleges, and I have found in the statistics that I have checked into that it is true that the average youngster in the United States spends about as much time sitting cross-legged on the floor watching the kiddie programs and staring at television by the time he is going to begin school as he will ever spend in formal education and the rest of his natural life. That's why I feel there is such a fantastic responsibility on the parents. Now, working at it from the point of view of the media is one thing. That's all well and good. And I feel there have been some very important strides made. Some of the producers of these kiddie shows and some of the cartoon reruns, the Tom's and Jerry's, you know, that we used to laugh at so much, where the kid is sticking his head in his cannon and somebody blows the cat's head off or the mouse's head off, but all he gets is a little soot on him, and the next frame, he's running around perfectly all right. It's hilariously funny to stab and gouge and to drink poison, to be blown to smithereens, jump off cliffs and bridges, be blasted up 100 feet in the air, make a huge 6-foot hole in the ground, crawl out of it, be flattened by like a pancake and slid under the door by a road roller of some kind. And you've seen it all happen, or disintegrate like broken crockery, and then the next scene you're running off chasing a mouse again. But the kids got the wrong idea from that. It was all a silly little game. So if you snatched up a gun and shot Mommy in the stomach, you, Mommy, why are you lying there? Get up and run around and laugh like the rest of the comics always did. And I'm not kidding. In real life situations like this have happened, where kids have simply picked up a dangerous weapon of some kind and let fly, because they have never been trained about the fantastic potential for suffering and for death that is there because of seeing thousands of hours, hundreds of hours, where they get real pros at violence. Now, working at it from the point of view of trying to correct the media is one thing, but you know, you as a parent have the responsibility to police what gets into your child's mind. You're a little bit careful, after all, about what gets into his mouth, aren't you? You know, you see a kid eating worms, you say, Johnny, don't do that. And I have literally seen a kid eat worms. And that's not a very healthy thought, but I remember so well in my neighborhood, there was a little kid in Eugene, Oregon that once demonstrated. He's, you know, thought we would bury him too. And sure enough, you know the way little kids are. You go ahead and say, I don't believe you'll eat that worm. He did. And I get a little sick every time I think of it to this day. So parents, when they see their kids eating worms or munching away happily on a handful of ants or something like this, or maybe eating a cigarette or sticking other strange objects into their mouths, they'll say, oh, don't do that. They fly into a panic. They maybe even get so carried away they might even spank the kid's hand. But, you know, parents that are awfully, awfully careful about what goes into a child's mouth think almost nothing about what gets into his mind. So instead of policing what he is reading in terms of comic books and magazines, it'll blow your mind if you take a look at the average magazine counter now in the corner drugstore. And you let kids that used to sit there with an orange soda looking at Captain Midnight or Superman, now what are they looking at? The centerfold. And there are magazine after magazine after magazine for them to be perusing through. But now, you see, you as a parent have a responsibility to practically force the world away from your child. You know, you almost have to shut certain elements of the world away from your child and take a protective attitude to try to protect your child from some things that are readily available to him. So if you're working at it from both points of view, which is certainly being supportive of and appreciative of any attempts to clean up the media and to enforce a little more sensible controls upon the perpetrators of violence in motion pictures and what stands as entertainment, and I don't know what is entertaining about seeing great big gouts of cat liver flung against the wall as you see somebody opened up with a 12-gauge shotgun and looking at it all in slow motion, but that's what they call entertainment these days. And I understand after Dirty Harry and Magnum Force, there wasn't a .44 Magnum available in the entirety of the United States because people just like to see things like that. You blow people apart with a gun, you stop a car, blow it apart with a gun or something like that, it gives a person a feeling of fantastic power. And so the kids see it, they gobble it up, and we begin to wonder why, as if we don't understand why, we are facing a mountainous avalanche of youth crime and violence. When you steep and seethe your mind in violence, when you shovel it into your mind like a starving person gobbling down food, when a youngster has seen, by the time he is 16, approximately 10,000 murders, and certainly seen intimated at a few hundred rapes, seen hundreds and thousands of cases of arson, of stabbings, of muggings, of purse snatchings, of kidnappings, of every assorted form of violence that ever is cataloged in a crime statistic, and he has put this in his mind and seen it, known it, and become familiar with it, what kind of an effect do we suppose it's going to have? Now, I'm not talking just alone about the super sensationalized cases of one particularly obnoxious motion picture that showed how to murder somebody where a couple of weirdos went and did it. I'm talking about the day-in, day-out repetitive violence that is available in motion pictures and increasingly on television and in the pages of the printed literature available to youngsters of prurient nature or even the so-called, G-rated or whatever literature that is in some of the men's magazines and this and that you can buy on the newsstands that begins to destroy a certain amount of human character. We are what we think. We are what we read. Our education is that total or sum total of all the experiences that mold and form and shape our character and our personality. It all begins at home, but parents more and more have to begin to take the role of policemen themselves by policing the kind of materials that get into the minds of their youths and the kind of kids that they run around with, the school to which they go, the type of language they use. Well, the kids themselves, in hindsight, in retrospect, these youngsters who ran afoul of the law and were willing to talk about what they thought the idealistic family, child, parent-child relationship should have been, gave a whole series of very common sense principles about the way they wish their parents had been with them. So this is not coming from a child psychologist, but from hundreds of youngsters who ran afoul of a law who were willing to talk to social workers about the way they wish it had been at their home. The last point I'd gotten to was point number 5, where they said, don't compromise and don't be intimidated by our threats to drop out of school or leave home. And too often we react through fear. We think, well, he'll leave home. What's out there? Well, you know, sometimes you've got to stand firm and say, okay, go ahead and leave home. But as long as you're going to be under my roof and partake of the food at my table, you're going to do what I say. You know, that makes sense. You get on the airliner. You've got your ticket. And you've paid for it. You don't want to put out your cigarette when the no smoking sign comes on. You're a rebel of some sort. You know, the rest of those passengers might not go along with you, and I'm sure the captain wouldn't. You know what could happen? If you, in a takeoff roll, happen to have some landing gear collapse, dipped a wing in and spewed kerosene all over. Now, maybe it doesn't go off right away. There have been many cases where ruptured fuel tanks have bathed people in kerosene or aviation gas and where the fire never started. But if some idiot is sitting there deciding he's not going to snuff out that cigarette when he's told by the light, and you've got all this gas there, then everybody goes up in smoke because some one individual wanted to satisfy some fleshly or human appetite. Well, I imagine the airline stewardess would come back and say, please, sir, would you put out the cigarette? And if you don't do it, she'd probably go get the steward, or she'd go get the co-pilot or somebody to ask you. And if you still don't do it, he's likely to eject you from the aircraft. And if you're in the air and about to land and you won't put it out, maybe what he'll do is just grab the cigarette from you and maybe put it out on the back of your hand. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know if he'd do that or not, but I guarantee you he'd get it out. I mean, there's such things as fire extinguishers. He can just come up to you and just give you a good squirt right in the face and put it out. That's another subject maybe, but I'm trying to illustrate the point. You run the airplane, you run the airline, you drive the vehicle, you've got a right to say how it ought to be run. If you're the one in charge of the home, and you're going to run your home a certain way, and your child, your youngster, is your own flesh and blood, you've got a right to tell that young person how to react, and what the rules are, and when to get home, and how to take care of the furniture, and when not, and when to use the car. Have parents begun to think that they don't have a right to tell their child what to do? There are millions of parents that react through fear these days. They're absolutely afraid to tell a strapping teenage boy or girl, son or daughter, I want you to do this or do that, even if it does make sense, because they're afraid, well, the kid might run away and leave home. Well, you know, that could be a lot better for him in some ways than letting him grow up to be a potential youthful criminal who might even turn on you someday, which is happening increasingly in these United States and in Canada, and to go ahead and take the lesser of the two evils. But oftentimes, parents get fearful. They're afraid of terrible, unimagined consequences, rather, and so they just go right ahead and compromise. Well, that's too bad, but that's the way it is. The sixth major point these youths gave was, be honest with us. Tell the truth no matter what, and be straight-arrowed about it. We want you to tell it like it is. They want to have parents level with them so they can respect the parents without finding out the parents were shading something one way or the other. The point is that no youngster is going to respect a parent who will cheat on his income tax or who will pad his expense account or who will tell before others, you know, visitors, or when he's out to dinner and the kid is along, or in front of other people in the society there, the relationship that they may have with the neighbors and the relatives, about this tremendous deal he swung and got away with. The average youngster is going to hear that loud and clear. And if they're telling about some corner they cut in legality or honesty or something, the kids really get it, and they get it very clearly. And it drives home a very important lesson. Well, you know, there is a reason for this mounting tidal wave of child crime, and it's time you went right to the core and the root of the problem and found out why and where it comes from. What is the root cause of teenage youthful violence? There's a reason for it, and it's right there at home. That's where it all begins. Again, I say that if people would get back to the basic precepts of discipline, of responsibility, of thrift, of a work-oriented society, of honesty, and in right and proper child-rearing, then the problem would virtually be solved. But we're looking at the effects. We're looking at all the aberrant behavior of youths that may have come from some ghetto-like environment where there was racism, there was a socioeconomic problem, there was a certain stratum of society that was visible, there was the influence of the peer pressure, there was the drug bit, possibly even parents on drugs, Who is the mother? Well, she might be a go-go dancer in the nearby corner bar. Who's the dad? Sometimes nobody knows, but if he is there, he may be the second time around. He may be a day laborer that has got his headaches and his problems. He can't get along with the old lady. He might be the guy that is swilling beer in the local corner honky-tonk every Saturday night and weeping about how his family is falling apart. You take a look at the kid, all you're seeing is a product. If you go home and look at the factory that formed, molded, and made that product what it is, you'd have a better understanding of how the kid got that way, because they don't just accidentally happen to be that way. Somebody makes them that way. There's a causal factor behind every bit of it. The seventh point was, the kid said they wanted to have the daylight scared out of them. They said, if you catch us lying, stealing, or being cruel, get tough. They said, when we need punishment, dish it out. But let us know you still love us, even though we have let you down. It'll make us think twice before we make the same move again. Let us know why what we did was wrong. Impress on us the importance of not repeating such behavior. You know, the child psychologists that talk about no discipline, and this booklet that I have for you to send by return mail, answers all the questions that are put forth by some of the child psychologists, shows whether or not love and punishment go together. If so, how you can do it point by point, how children learn, what they are, how they develop, what are the stages of childhood, how to help teenagers, what some of the influences that will be coming upon them are, should kids be left to themselves, what kind of play, what are the real differences, boy and girl, should children pretend, developing personality, the mind, character, responsibility. But you know, the interesting thing to me is that as I read through some of these comments that the kids themselves have given social workers when they had gotten in trouble with the law, it almost sounds like some of the things I put in this booklet when I did the research so long ago. Point after point after point about consistency, about discipline, about honesty and leveling with the kids. It seems that the kids are trying to tell us some of the same things that we ought to be able to read right out of the Bible. So you write for these two booklets on the plain truth about child rearing and the booklet on crime can be stopped. Here's how. They're free of charge, no price. Protect yourself against crime. Write for this booklet, Crime Can Be Stopped. Here's how. I have talked to police people all over the United States, some of the leading police chiefs of the big cities in the United States, who have said that in our society it seems to be all turned around backwards now. The criminals are the ones roaming the street that seem to have perfect freedom, and the, as we say, the innocent people. And I use that term with regard to innocence in man's sight, not God's sight, of course, but the innocent people are the ones that are locked up at night. And you know, the more you think about that, the truer it is. So this booklet shows you about your own home, how to discourage burglars, what to do before you take a trip, what to do while at home, what to do on the way from home, what about your doors and windows, backyard fences and hedges, dark areas, what to do when you plan prolonged absences. All you need to do to receive this booklet is to give us the call letters of your station. We'd like that, if you would please, the call letters of your radio station. While you're at it, why don't you request the current number of the Plain Truth and find that there is a solution beyond human understanding. And we talk in the Plain Truth plainly even about Bible prophecy and about an ultimate solution beyond the acknowledgement of today's news media, because they simply do not acknowledge God or Bible prophecy. And that's what you will read in the Plain Truth. It is Plain Truth, straight from the shoulder, plain talk. I hope you'll write for it. We'll send it to you by return mail as soon as you dial that toll-free number, 800-423-4444. Or you can write to me, Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow with Garner Ted Armstrong, sponsored by the Worldwide Church of God. For literature offered on this program, send your requests along with the call letters of this station to Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. Or you may dial this toll-free number, 800-423-4444.